The Guardian.
A few weeks ago, I had one of the most unbearable commutes. It was just so incredibly hot. Sweat was rolling down my back, and more people were pressing themselves onto a tube that already felt packed beyond capacity. It was like an unsolicited game of sardines. Above ground, the Met Office was measuring temperatures of 30 degrees centigrade. Shops were selling out of ice creams and fans. The grass had turned brown and crispy. In my 29 years of life, I've never experienced anything like this, nothing as hot or as prolonged. Thankfully, temperatures dipped recently as a storm swept over the UK. But the thermometer is set to rise again. And if weather forecasters are to be believed, we could have warm weather for weeks, if not months, to come. The UK has not been the only ones in the grip of a heatwave. Wildfires have broken out across the Arctic Circle. Flames have ravaged California, Sweden, and Greece.
But for many hit by devastating wildfires here, the grief is only just beginning. At this DNA lab, families are looking for answers. As they enter with strands of hair from their missing loved ones to be examined, bodies which have been identified...
People are dying in Japan, where temperatures have risen to over 40 degrees centigrade. So what's going on? Is this heatwave a blip, or can we expect extreme weather events like these to become more frequent over the coming decades?
We fully expect to see these kinds of crazy summers with very intense and persistent heat waves continue and probably get worse.
And if so, what does that mean?
And one thing that became apparent is that all these people were working in very hot environments. And so my initial thought was that perhaps it was heat stress and dehydration that could be involved in this disease.
I'm Greg Jackson, and this is Science Weekly.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. How am I sounding?
You're sounding great, actually. You're really good. Can I get you to first just introduce yourself, Jennifer?
Sure. I'm Jennifer Francis. I'm a research professor in the Department of Marine and Coastal Sciences at Rutgers University.
So what does that mean you do? What does that mean you research?
Well, for my whole career, I've been focused on the atmosphere, particularly in the Arctic. But just in the last 5 years or so, I've been changing my focus a little bit. And not just looking at the Arctic itself, but looking at how the rapid changes up there may be affecting weather patterns down here where billions of people live. So these remote effects of the rapid warming and sea ice loss up there.
The Arctic has had an exceptional time in terms of weather. Back in February, the Cape Morris Jesup weather station in northern Greenland recorded temperatures of around 6 degrees C. That doesn't sound too warm, but typically scientists would expect this figure to be about minus 30 degrees C. The warm temperatures then brought about a record low for sea ice.
We've been observing the spring snow cover disappear much earlier over the high latitude land areas. So all along, you know, northern Europe and northern Asia and also northern North America. And when that snow disappears earlier in the spring, it exposes the soil underneath to the strong spring sunshine much earlier. And that allows that soil to dry out faster and warm up faster. And so this basically gets summer going earlier in the spring.
But how would something happening over 4,000 kilometres away affect the weather here in London? Jennifer believes it's because of something called the jet stream.
So the polar jet stream is really just a river of wind that's high up over our heads, up near where the jets fly. And it exists because of the temperature difference between the Arctic, which is, of course, very cold, and areas farther south. And so it's really just a wind, and you can look at it on a day-to-day basis, and it really does just look like a meandering river that's traveling around the Northern Hemisphere.
So when there's a big temperature gradient between the North Pole and the lower latitudes, the jet stream is powerful. Just like in a real river, when you're high in a mountain, the gradient is steep, and so the stream flows fast and fairly straight.
South. So the bigger that temperature difference, the stronger the jet stream is. And so it's really.
But as the river moves downstream and reaches flatter land, it slows down and meanders left, right, left, right. There's so little gradient that the speed of the water becomes slovenly. And this is just like the jet stream. When the temperature difference is low, it slows.
Those big waves tend to move very slowly and may even get stuck in one place for a long time. And so that means those highs and lows that really do create the weather we feel on the surface are also moving much more slowly. The other aspect that's been happening more often and has a big impact, especially in the summer, is that we're seeing the jet stream split into two parts. So one part goes north and the other part goes south. And this tends to happen mainly over the continents. And the reason this is important is because recent research has shown that these split jet patterns tend to trap those high and low pressure areas between them, and once again, make them much more slow moving and persistent. And so we have these two factors that are really conspiring to make weather patterns all around the Northern Hemisphere much more persistent. And so, you know, when you've got a couple of hot days, everybody's kind of happy about that because, you know, you kind of dream about those all winter long. But when they go on for weeks, as has been happening in the UK and Japan and other places around the Northern Hemisphere, it starts to become a real problem.
It's strange to think that something that's so far away in my mind can impact so heavily on the weather here.
Well, it's all connected through the jet stream.
Presumably, if the Arctic is melting faster than anywhere else in the world, does that mean this is going to get worse in the future?
That would be my best guess. And we have a lot of model projections, climate model simulations that suggest that this is indeed the case. So yes, as we continue to not change our behavior, continue to emit lots of greenhouse gases, dumping them into the atmosphere, increasing the warming of the globe because of those heat trapping gases, then we fully expect to see these kinds of crazy summers with very intense and persistent heat waves continue and probably get worse. That's exactly right.
If heat waves are going to become more common, then how might that affect us? Next, we turn to one area of the world where prolonged and prevalent heat waves could be causing chronic kidney disease in thousands of people.
Oftentimes, dialysis and transplantation are not available. And so, unfortunately, a lot of times when they develop kidney failure, there's very little that can be done for them.
I'll be back in a moment after the break.
My name is Sigrun. I live in Reykjavik, Iceland. I read The Guardian every morning. I realized that this is something that I would like to pay for. It's a service I value. It's journalism I respect. The Guardian brings me the quality I like. So I realized, hey, this is something I should be a part of.
Hello, my name is Brian and I live in Norwich. I decided to become a supporter of The Guardian newspaper because I like the quality of its journalism. And I also felt it was time to make a stand because I'm getting tired of the journalism I'm seeing in other newspapers that are owned by rich owners, where there is a lot of bias into their editorials. I hope this inspires some of you to become supporters too. and in your own small way, make a stand.
Hi, my name is Wesley. I live in Utrecht in the Netherlands, and I've recently decided to become a Guardian supporter because it's, well, one of the few news sources that I feel is still delivering accurate news. Yeah, it feels like I can trust the Guardian. For me, that's, I think, the most important thing, and especially when they said we don't want to do too much advertisements and we don't want to become dependent upon other people that can manipulate the news, I felt that it was good to support our democracy.
If, like Sigrun, Wesley and Brian, you would like to join the growing number of readers who support our independent journalism, then go to gu.com/support/podcast.
I'm Greg Jackson, and welcome back to Science Weekly. Before the break, we looked at why the Northern Hemisphere is experiencing a heatwave. Rising temperatures in the Arctic have caused the jet stream to stall, trapping the hot weather. And this has caused fiendish temperatures and forest fires to spread across huge swathes of the Earth, from Seattle to Siberia. Once considered freak phenomena, scientists think these extreme weather events are going to become more common. And this is bad news for regions like Central America, where it's thought that heat stress and dehydration is causing kidney failure and killing thousands of people. Okay, so are you recording?
I am recording.
Oh, that was a very satisfying noise. That something we love in audio. This is Richard Johnson. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Colorado. He works in the field of kidney disease. And Richard told me that this problem was first picked up in the early 2000s.
There's a gentleman named Ramon Garcia Trabanino who was working in San Salvador at the Hospital Rosales. And he noted that there were all these patients in the wards with newly diagnosed kidney failure. As he investigated, he realized that most of these people didn't have the classic diabetes and high blood pressure, which are the primary causes of kidney failure, but rather these were young people coming in from the coast who were primarily sugarcane workers. And he realized at that point that this was very unusual. And subsequently, others were noting this epidemic at about the same time in Nicaragua and in Costa Rica and other places. And within a few years, it became apparent that there was this big epidemic going on.
After nearly a decade, Ramon's findings finally began to garner some attention, though. It was presented at the World Congress of Nephrology in Canada in 2011. This is how Richard became aware of the situation and began to look for causes.
Well, it was about that time that I became really interested in this because I was very interested in how dehydration might cause kidney disease. And one thing that became apparent is that all these people were working in very hot environments and that they were working outside, that many of them were showing some signs of dehydration. And so my initial thought was that perhaps it was heat stress and dehydration that could be involved in this disease. And by studying laboratory animals, we found that recurrent heat stress and dehydration could cause chronic kidney disease. And so we began to think that perhaps what was going on where these individuals were out there repeatedly over the course of a harvest and then year after year, being exposed to high temperatures, not necessarily hydrating that well, and not necessarily getting as much shade as they need, and that they could be developing kidney disease.
Richard had seen what had happened in animal models, but now he needed to see if it was happening in humans. So he went out and collected urine samples from the sugarcane farmers in El Salvador.
One of the possible mechanisms for kidney disease is that when body temperatures go up and when you get dehydrated, your urine becomes very concentrated and you can develop crystals in your urine. So we were looking for those crystals in the urine of these sugarcane workers. And so what we did is we collected a sample in the morning before they went out onto the harvest, and then we would get a sample when they came off the later in the afternoon when they came back. And we found that about 15% of the time they had crystals in their urine. At one time point, we got back only like 8 samples instead of the normal. We were studying like 20 people, but all of them had crystals. And I was very curious what had happened. And I found out and, Googled the temperature, what the temperature was. And it was the day before was the hottest day in the entire year when these guys were out there on the sugarcane fields. And so what happened is this big heat wave came in, and all of them got this crystal, suggesting that they got a little bit too dehydrated and started developing some kidney disease. And when we started looking at this, we saw that the epidemic was increasing consistent with the increasing in heat waves that are being seen in that area. So this is sort of the evidence that makes us think that for sure these epidemics are related to temperature. For sure they're related to heat waves.
Can I ask, how serious is chronic kidney disease? Is it something that you can treat?
Well, chronic kidney disease, when it gets severe, can be very, very dangerous for an individual unless there are treatments available. There's dialysis, there's kidney transplantation. But if you have severe kidney failure, it can lead to death. One of the terrible things about where this disease is occurring, it's often occurring in rural communities where there's not the best medicine, and oftentimes dialysis and transplantation are not available. And so unfortunately, a lot of times when they develop kidney failure, there's very little that can be done for them.
This disease isn't restricted to El Salvador, though. And if heat waves are to become the norm, it could spell a lot of problems for a lot of people.
And I contacted the International Society of Nephrologists, and we started investigating and looking at other areas of the world where chronic kidney disease was being reported. And one area is in India, and it's in the area of Andhra Pradesh. And it's an area that's also correlated with the hottest areas with increasing heat waves and so forth. And also, we found that this also mapped with an epidemic of chronic kidney disease occurring in people working in rice paddies in northern Sri Lanka, where, again, it was the hotter area of the country. And all of them have the same kind of kidney disease. They don't have diabetes. They don't have high blood pressure. It's always people working outside. They have the same characteristic features. The kidney biopsies look the same. And I believe that there's going to be more reports linking it with heat stress and so forth.
If I'm understanding this correctly, people who are working out in the field in this really prolonged heat, very high temperatures, they're sweating a lot and they're becoming dehydrated. And that is causing the kidneys not being able to function properly, and therefore they get uric crystals in their urine, a sign that their kidneys are unable to cope due to a lack of water. And over long periods of time, if this is happening again and again and again, they are developing chronic kidney disease. So could this not be solved with better access to water for these farmers, for these builders who are in these high temperatures all day?
Yes, so there does appear to be a decrease in the amount of kidney disease with good hydration. So it's very promising that is one type of treatment that may really help these people. Whether or not it will completely prevent the disease, we need to have more data on, but it really does look promising.
Of course, providing access to drinking water and better working conditions comes with its own set of hurdles. What worries me is that almost one-fifth of the world's population already live in areas of water scarcity. And as the climate changes, as the population grows, and as we pollute our existing supplies of water, the UN predicts that that number could rise to 5 billion people. And without access to water, this form of kidney disease could become much more prevalent. If you'd like to get in touch with us about anything you've heard on the podcast, you can. The email is scienceweekly@theguardian.com, or you can tweet us at Guardian Audio. A special thanks to Richard Johnson and Jennifer Francis for joining us on Science Weekly. And until next time, goodbye.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.